we've got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. He said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Friday, November 27th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today is going to be a focused special show, sort of like we used to do before all the COVID madness came around. Today we are going to be focusing on foreign policy, but I can't promise, depending on how tired I am after this show, I'm going to try to be following this up with a full show on everything else when we're done. But as you may have seen, there's quite a bit going on today, specifically in regard to foreign policy. So I felt this was a perfect opportunity to bring in all the things that I've been holding off to make sure that you could see in regard to foreign policy. But don't forget, what's going on with COVID-19, with the technocratic revolution, the tri-security, the biosecurity state, I was combining the two, the tri-national security state and the biosecurity state, all these things that we see building. All of these are intricately connected with foreign policy and the agendas of the governments that I think are driving all of it. And this is what we're going to get into today. Now, you might have heard there's been some very important developments that I think are going to be leading to something that is going to change the face of what's happening in foreign policy today. And depending on a few key actions from key people, but let's just jump right into this today so we can get over to talk about the first part of this and how it relates to the bigger picture of all the things that I've been talking about for a very, very long time. Now, as you might have seen in the news today, we are seeing that there's been an assassination of an Iranian scientist. And I want to start off right in the beginning here to just remove any doubt about what we're talking about. Now, first of all, understand that the Israeli government has absolutely assassinated Iranian scientists more than once without any justification, no due process, no, the point is that there's no actual legality here. There's no legal standing. Just because Iran bad guy, and you say Iran bad guy, doesn't mean you can just violate any kind of international norms or laws or anything you choose. But that's what's been happening with U.S. foreign policy and Israeli foreign policy for quite a long time now. Bombing Iran, bombing Syria, saying because Iran's there, which is not a legal justification. Occupying locations, even though the U.N. says those are legal occupations, they don't care. They do not care because they're off the rails. They're not trying to be legitimate or trying to be legal. There's much more at stake here. But as you can see from the New York Times, Iran's top nuclear scientist killed in attack. Now, we're going to get into the nuclear part of that because we're talking about a civilian nuclear program, as has been attested to by the IAEA, despite all the changes and manipulations after the previous director, Amano, was mysteriously died. Well, I'm not even going to get into that story. If you want, I did a whole video on that and the ties to Israel and all that in the past, because this was a person who was openly saying that Israel was trying to influence him to say things that weren't true. But, you know, that has nothing to do with this today. But now with the new situation in the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is supposed to be monitoring whether Iran is actually violating the nuclear deal that's technically on. I mean, there's so much to this story. But the point is, I'll get into the nuclear discussion and why it's not what they're making it out to be. But here's what it says. The scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, was described as by the United States and Israeli intelligence assessments as the force behind Iran's nuclear weapons program. Now, of course, this is them describing the weapons program, which as far as I'm concerned, as far as my research has shown, as far as the evidence has shown, it doesn't exist. It's simply not there. Now, you could argue that it's secret and we don't see it, and they see something we don't, but that's interesting, seeing as how the IAEA continues to say the opposite. But it says news reports in Iran say he died after being attacked in a vehicle. But here's the important part. Three officials said that Israel was behind the attack. This is the New York Times, which is nothing more than the fact that this is where official sources, as far as the mainstream consensus, comes from. So this is important to understand, as right now it's being debated and discussed. And on top of all of that, Israel is very open about the fact that it has the right to do any of this stuff. Why? Well, because of Ron Bad Guy. And it's actually no more depth than that. That they don't think Iran is the bad entity and they're doing bad things. Don't ask for any more. And they'll say that anything they do is defending itself against those future actions. This is the whole Bethlehem doctrine we've talked about before. I believe that's the correct term. But the idea that they talk about preemptive self-defense, and that's what all this circles around. The idea that because they might have been doing something that could lead to actions against them, that this is all justified because they were defending themselves. Nobody should think that makes sense. And in fact, if it was happening in reverse and Iran was doing that with the same logic, would it apply for them? Obviously not. But let's get right into the actual story, as I can tell from numerous sources on the ground, as well as I've been talking with Robert Inlakesh all day about this, and he's currently in touch with numerous sources in numerous locations all around this story. And we are going to be following up together, as well as Robert's going to be doing a video just on this topic. So stay tuned to The Last American Vagabond for the actual story of what's going on, not what the mainstream and Israel's government wants you to think is going on. Israel suspected an assassination of top Iranian scientist. A top Iranian scientist was assassinated near Tehran. Now, what's interesting to me in all of this is the just absolute lack of decorum, which is it's almost impossible to pretend like there's decorum in war anyway. But there, historically speaking, there's the pretense of one where you're supposed to do certain things and you're not supposed to attack people in certain locations and so on, you know, civilian lives and all that. Our governments don't care about that at all. And if you think otherwise, then you're just not paying attention. Actions that are ongoing in Yemen, which we'll talk about in a minute, way down at the end of the show, where they're continuing to starve. It's the worst humanitarian crisis on the planet. But of course, we don't care about that because that's something the U.S. government and Saudi Arabia are championing. So we just don't talk about it. In Tehran, it happened in a populated area. Civilians all around. As I understand it, other people actually died, but that's still being confirmed. The idea that this is even happening in a public civilian location without any actual legal standing is if this happened, if any other entity did this outside the U.S. and Israeli circles, this would be a huge deal. This would be war ground. I mean, this is an act of war. So just because they want to make out Iran out to be the bad guy here, the villain, even if that's the case, even if you believe everything that Israel's government is saying about Iran, they still do not have the legal standing to just unilaterally and just carry out an extrajudicial assassination of a scientist. But they do, and they have. So you're going to get painting the picture of who's actually the entity that's breaking the rules here, as it were. The group that's not doing, the entity that is the criminal. Israel has previously alleged that the scientist, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, headed an Iranian military nuclear program. Now, forgive my pronunciation, by the way. I know that's technically correct, but I'm, you know, not the best at the Iranian names. But it was important to me to make sure I got it correct because this is somebody who was assassinated. The nuclear program is a very important part of this. Because what they're trying to insinuate in the mainstream is that there's been this nuclear program and that this person was in fact working on dangerous nuclear bombs, which they weren't allowed to do. And that's why this makes sense, even though even that would not be legal, understand. Even if they knew as a matter of fact he was making nuclear bombs, assassinating him without some kind of legal process is not international law. That is a violation. Another crime adding to the long list of Israeli government crimes. But on top of all that, it wasn't actually what's happening, according to the IAEA. It says in a statement, Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif condemned the attack and said there are serious indications of an Israeli role in the assassination. In 2018, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called out Fakhrizadeh in a news conference and said, remember that name. Right here. Let's take a listen.
A key part of the plan was to form new organizations to continue the work. This is how Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, head of project...
Fakhrizadeh is how he's saying it, but it's close enough.
Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh. So here's his directive. It's right here. And he says, the general aim is to announce the closure of Project Ahmad, but then he adds, special activities, you know what that is, special activities will be carried out under the title of scientific know-how developments.
See, the things when he said, like, that kind of idea, you know what that means. These are blind assumptions based on the insinuation that, well, because we know that they're bad guy, that means bad guy things. And that's just childish. But the point here is that this is, I love Netanyahu's clownish, Wile E. Coyote displays of, you know, the way he does these big presentations that are nothing. The wall full of CDs that he's pointing to and saying, here's what's on them. It's like, okay, cool. Are we just going to trust it? It's a meaningless display. Or a graph of a bomb where he's drawing how close they are. Remember how he does that every so many years and it's never actually correct. And the IAEA has continued to say that he's not correct. In fact, that he continues to use old things and point to the same things repeatedly at different times to trick people into thinking there's something new happening. This is him pointing to the scientist saying, this is somebody that you need to remember. This is a problem. It's a person that numerous different discussions from Netanyahu about this individual and specifically Project Nimrod, which they claimed was a nuclear weapons program, except there's not any evidence of that. And in fact, it goes forward to show that it was actually stopped in 2003. He says, quote, terrorists murdered an eminent Iranian scientist today. This cowardice with serious indications of an Israeli role shows desperate warmongering of the perpetrators. The New York Times cited three anonymous officials. Again, make sure you remember that because that is an important aspect of this. That said Israel was behind the assassination. Fakhrizadeh headed Iran's Ahmad project, a nuclear program the U.S. and Israel claim was a military operation. According to the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and U.S. intelligence, the Ahmad program was halted in 2003. Okay, this is what we see constantly, where things that they have claimed, such as Syria destroying all their chemical weapons up until the point when they need them to use them. So they pretend like, well, that must not have been true. So were you wrong then? Were you lying then? Or couldn't you be wrong now? Nah, I don't think about any of that. Just listen to blindly what your government tells you in this moment, regardless of whether it contradicts previous things that they've said. Now he's supposed to be in this Ahmad project, and that was happening because they were being told it's happening by the Israeli government. So then they must have just been wrong in 2003. Could they be wrong now then too? Nah, I don't think about that. Israel is believed to be responsible for a series of assassinations of Iranian scientists that mainly took place between 2010 and 2012. No repercussions, no actions, no legal no investigations. You know, all these governments that continue to stand up and bluster about how they're fighting for good things and freedom and democracy and fighting this kind of thing, completely ignore it every time it comes, even seems to come from one of the people that they're working with. Which just constantly continues to show you their wild hypocrisy, that it has nothing to do with fighting for people. They don't care about human rights and civilians and being, it's all about how they use those things to achieve their goals. Because if they actually cared about them, they would care about them in every instance, not just when it was happening at places they could benefit from. It says, while Israel has not officially acknowledged its role, Israeli officials have hinted that they were behind the killings, which is what happens every time. So far, Israeli officials have not commented on this one as of maybe half an hour ago, because I'm sure this is currently developing as we are sitting here now. So if you guys know of anything, please add it to the chat so people can know what's going on. Now it says the killing comes at a time of heightened tensions in the region. Earlier this month, reports said President Trump reviewed options to strike an Iranian nuclear site. We talked about that at the time. Since then, Israel has leaked stories about their preparedness for a U.S. attack on Iran. And there has been an uptick in Israeli airstrikes against what they call Iranian-linked targets in Syria. So it's really ridiculous for us to pretend like, one, there's not plenty of information before all this to suggest that it's pretty clear that this is something they would do, could do, and have done. But then on top of that, we have three sources saying that Israel did it and is admitting to do it. Then on top of all of that, we have them claiming that they're planning to do exactly that. It just gets really ridiculous when we see the backpedaling of the media trying to make this into what they want it to be. Now, what's important before we go forward is that there is some interesting... Basically, Robert Enlakesh is of the mind that this is something that is specifically because of what's happening right now. Everything. And you know, even a year ago, this wouldn't be the same situation. So right now, the fact is that if Israel admits to this, it seems quite clear based on the sources from Robert, people in Iran, people on the ground, and numerous sources that have already been cited, and I'll get to one in a minute, that they will be responding to this. They will be. That's decided. But if Israel claims it, that this will begin war footing. very seriously. And the idea is that he believes that at the end of the day, it makes more sense for them to push it off onto the United States, to claim that they were behind it, to avoid some kind of massive kickoff of war that's outside of the way that they want it to start. Understand that I believe they've been pushing for this for a long time. Now, this also seems to kind of tie in with what Whitney and I were talking about, of course, about the Iranian, China, Russia aspect of the election and the election chaos. Remember, we are right in the time frame of when Cyber Reason was predicting all of this up until January 20th. Now, Cyber Reason has also been talking about all these Iranian, you know, ransomware. They've just talked about a new one that that's just happening now. I can promise you it's going to get tied back to Iran or one of these entities. And you can see how these might intertwine. Now, suddenly, if we say, uh-oh, well, Iran did something in the election, and that's why we see all this happening, and that's why action was taken, and they assassinated the scientists because that was their retaliation. As disgusting as that would be, based on no evidence, no actual legal standing, people in this country would go, oh, well, that makes sense, which is horrifying. But the point being is that would be yet another assassination. But all of it, in my opinion, very clearly stems back to Israel's government. And then we have to ask ourselves whether that's what we're staring at, and there's obvious influence from Israel's government over our government in every possible way, and whether that's what this is. Interesting. But we need to remember that there is no credence to any of the ideas coming from the people that they're using to investigate this, that there is actually a nuclear program that they should be concerned about. Now, let's just get to that actually first, because this is... Make sure I didn't jump forward. Well, here's Javad Zarif's tweet. You know what I tweeted out when I read this, when I first saw that this was happening, when I first heard that this happened? This is what terrorism looks like. This is what it looks like. An extrajudicial, outside the law, murder of a scientist. Just because you want to frame him as doing something that you think is bad? You know, this is what's so frustrating about this whole story. Even if you believe he's making nuclear weapons, why do we deem that to be some... The U.S. is still currently violating the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So is Russia. So is most of them. Saudi Arabia just got nuclear technology from the U.S. and from Israel. That doesn't seem to be a problem. They're already talking about nuclear technology from other people in the Middle East, despite the fact that being some kind of red line in the past. The point is that just because they don't like Iran... And make up all these claims about it that, by the way, I continue to show are baseless. And it doesn't mean that their government is necessarily any better or worse than generally governments, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, what they're claiming about that they're rebel groups around the world, they're completely making stuff up from whole cloth. That doesn't mean they're not tied to people around the world. Doesn't mean they don't have allies. Doesn't mean they don't sell weapons to allies or buy weapons from allies, just like every other government on the planet. But because Iran bad guy, will those things suddenly become unprecedented? And that's what's so frustrating about this. Even if he was working on a nuclear bomb, they murdered a scientist because they think they're not allowed to do it despite everybody else being allowed to. We're in this very childish game of making the people that they don't like out to be villains in this ridiculous movie that they're having. The whole thing is such a stage. And that's what's so frustrating about it. The people like us that can be objective and stand back and realize that, you know, this guy had a family. This guy had ambitions and desires. And you know, it wasn't just the Iranian bad guy government as they're trying to make it out to be. There's a lot more going on here, including, by the way, the other people that potentially died, who also had families, who also were killed illegally. He said, terrorists murdered an eminent Iranian scientist today. This cowardice with serious indications of Israeli role shows desperate warmongering of perpetrators. Iran calls on the international community and especially the EU to tend their shameful double standards and condemn this act of state terror. And I had to show this, by the way. Actually, I'll get to that in a minute. I forgot I mixed all these up afterward. But here's the point of this is coming from a news agency in Iran, commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. We took a decision to retaliate and severely punish those who planned, carried out, and supported the assassination of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. So they're saying that we are going to act. Now, of course, that could just be bluster. Sometimes it is. Doesn't seem like it, though. It really doesn't. Well, why don't we just go through these before so I don't get myself all mixed up. But the point was I was going to get over to the nuclear aspect of this, and I'm going to show you quite clearly. And this is what's so painful about this, it's easy to just go to the IAEA and show you what they're actually saying. It's incredible how easy that is, right? Prominent Iranian physicist assassinated near Tehran. Now, this is coming from Press TV, and there's a little more detail here in regard to the ins and outs. Now, it says the attack targeted the vehicle carrying Fakhradizadeh, who headed the Iranian Defense Ministry's Organization of Defense Innovation and Research, the SPND, according to the agency. Right. So it's interesting. You listen to Western press and it's a nuclear weapon scientist. Right. And here they're saying he's an Iranian defense minister's organization of defense innovation and research. Probably somewhere in the middle. Right. It's just funny how there's always the different stories. Right. The Department of War. And now suddenly today is the Department of Defense. Right. You know, it's just they're all like this. Governments are like this. It's only the fact that we allow our government to taint us against other people around the world because they have interest at what they own or can want to control their territory or want their resources or want, you know, any number of things. So let's make them bad guy. And don't forget, historically speaking, we're talking about people that they worked with up until they decided they're no longer useful, like Saddam Hussein, like Osama bin Laden. Don't forget that in Iran, before the illegal overthrow in Operation Ajax, the country was much like the United States. You can very easily look that up and see the pictures of women in bikinis. And then suddenly the U.S. government creates conditions for an overthrow of their government, creates a coup, overthrows their government, and then drives it into exactly what they're pointing at as the problem today. Just think about how crazy stupid that is. We're talking about the people that created it. It's just like the U.S. government creating Al-Qaeda and ISIS and then going, look, ISIS, we need to invade countries to stop the thing that we clearly created and funded and armed and protected and moved on and on and on. The Defense Ministry's office said that he was severely wounded in the course of the clashes. And I've heard this going back and forth where some say he was injured and they brought him to the hospital. Some saying he died right away. Always discrepancies. And actually, in fact, Iran, as I understand at the beginning, was saying that nothing happened, which also is very customary. Nobody wants to admit that they were taken advantage of or attacked in a way that made them look weak if they can control the situation. As I understand it, now that's coming out and it's very clear that this happened. But they said they transferred him to a hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. Now, Faris said 3 to 4 people were killed in the shooting, which I'm still waiting for this to flesh out. I haven't actually got multiple confirmation here. But it does appear from a few different, you know, unconfirmed sources that multiple people were killed. Never realized whether that's Israel, the United States. I mean, this is where you get into the foggy ground. I mean, all of this is completely illegal. But when you start having innocent people killed alongside, even the argument that, well, bad guy, well, nuclear stuff, doesn't really carry it because you can't just murder 4 people. Well, clearly the U.S. has showed you that you really can and get away with it as long as you lie about it and tell us that we're the bad guys. But you shouldn't be allowed to, and that will change the story. It says photos and footage shared online of the attack showed bullet holes in the windshield of the car and pool of blood on the road. And according to RT, this was just the point in general that it happened in the capital of Tehran, which I thought was very interesting. And this says the scientist was struck by gunfire after his car was stopped by an explosion at Mustafa Khomeini Boulevard. Clearly this was very planned in a very public location, right? He's on Mustafa Khomeini Boulevard and they create an explosion to stop him and then attack the convoy. This is a civilian area, guys. Imagine where you live right now. Imagine your biggest intersection where you live right now. Now imagine Iran. Or any of them. Imagine Israel came in and just started exploding things in the middle of your street because they had somebody they wanted to stop. Does that sound okay to you? They don't care about your life and what other things were happening around you or the effort that needs to be taken to fix the area they just destroyed in the middle of a public area, right? Nobody cares about, nobody thinks about any of these things if it's not happening in your backyard. As long as it's happening in the bad guy Middle East area, we don't care. Go ahead and just do what you want and tell us we're fighting for freedom. Think about this happening next to your home, killing your family based on the idea that Israel somehow has the right to defend itself in somebody else's country. It says images released to the press showed the exploded wreckage of one vehicle and a second bullet marked car in which the scientist was traveling. So clearly multiple cars, which they clearly didn't know which is which. So I think it's pretty clear that more than one person died here. And we have to know that that's not okay. Oh, and I'm going to include all these links, by the way. It's really important that you guys take the time to look through the backstory as well. There's numerous examples of Israeli entities admitting that they're behind these assassinations. Says we will, and this is one of the things I keep showing you, and this is not just about this specific incident. They say this in Syria, they say this in regard to Iraq. They say we will act in any way, meaning anything they want to do. Clearly, they're very humble, right? Clearly, they think they can do whatever they want. Is that not clear to anybody? We will act in any way and are not willing to tolerate a nuclear-armed Iran. Except that's not actually happening. It's not even close. We prefer that this be done by means of sanctions, but in the end, Israel would be able to defend itself. Should be able. So defending yourself is murdering a scientist in the middle of the capital of a foreign country. That sound like that makes sense to anybody? So if Iran murders a scientist in the middle of an Israeli city, is that Iran defending itself? See how dumb it looks when you flip it around? But it doesn't matter because Iran bad guy, it is real ally. It doesn't matter. There's no logic. There's no facts. There's no honesty or integrity. It's just about the agenda, the clumsy, ham-fisted, in-your-face agenda based on the idea that they're right no matter what. It's very disgusting. And understand that as an American, this disgusts me, that my name is on this regardless of whether I support it. Because they're acting in my name regardless of whether I protest what they're doing. That's why all Americans need to realize that they are not you. They're the government. They are not you. We are the American people. We are the country. There are agents acting on our behalf, and they don't care what you think anymore. That's what we need to wake up to. They will act in any way. Now, realize the point here is that the Israeli government we're pointing to has the influence over this government, over the U.S. government, over the U.S. Congress, in a very, very obvious undue way. They'll do whatever they want. Tensions simmer over possible U.S. strike. Now, this is from the day before. Yes, this is yesterday, saying that tensions have been high in the Middle East since the New York Times reported that President Trump reviewed options to strike an Iranian nuclear facility during an Oval Office meeting. Now, they ultimately said no, but it said covert options like cyber attacks, which, by the way, they're openly doing. That's not a secret. The U.S. and Israel have boasted about carrying out cyber attacks in Iran, which, by the way, are flagrantly illegal. But of course, if even the hint of a cyber attack against us and we're about to declare war, right? Because that makes total sense. We cannot be this naive. Are there any, I mean, where are all the grown-ups out there? How can we not realize how incredibly broken this is? And what these people are acting, are pushing out as virtuous is the worst possible thing. These are criminals acting in, I mean, like this is mafia tactics. To reference a point that we're going to get to in a minute. They are acting like thugs. We're powerful. We can do what we want. The laws don't apply. You do what we say, or we're going to hurt you. Now, the point here, guys, is that this is not a new discussion. I've done probably 15 videos just on the JCPOA, and specifically the two articles, I believe 26 and 36, that very, very, very clearly show you that everything that Iran is doing right now is not only not a violation, but is literally within the JCPOA. I mean, it's baffling to me that we can continue to have places, even like Reuters, anybody out there, just stupidly misrepresent that, which shows you that they not only, I mean, I find it almost impossible that Reuters as an organization or the Reuters staff, I guess, who wrote this, don't know that those things are there. But nonetheless, here's the title, UN Watchdog. And this is what this actually was. This is 10 months ago. This is actually the IAEA coming out and saying, no, there's no violations. But of course, how they frame it in the biased mainstream media is they see no new violations. Isn't that great? That's not what they said. They said that there weren't violations, but of course, because Reuters knows the narrative is that they're already violating it, they just go, no, new ones. It's not true. They say Iran has taken further steps to violate, wrong, already wrong, 100% already incorrect. The 2015 nuclear deal with world powers, since it renounced last month, all restraints imposed by the agreement. That's not what happened at all. It's painful how ridiculous this is. I've shown you the exact statements from Iran. I've shown you exactly what they said. They literally spoon-fed people, walked them through what they're doing. And all of the Western media just ignored it because they know what they're supposed to be doing. They're literally taking actions that are designed within this deal to do if and when things happen like we're seeing, such as the United States violating the deal, the EU and the US imposing sanctions or allowing them on Iran, they are allowed to do what they're doing. And I'll get to that right after this. But it says after the fifth step, there hasn't been any follow-up. Of course, they continue to enrich. Ooh, you mean the thing that they're allowed to do? Okay, don't make sure we understand that, Reuters. Good job. Everybody in the world, every government is allowed to enrich uranium for a civilian program. But of course, Pompeo and all the people that are trying to manipulate you, they play on your ignorance about that. And they act like, look, they're enriching this. Yeah, so is everybody. And right now, the U.S. is clearly way, way, way ahead of everybody in regard to how many nukes they have and the fact that they're still doing it, despite the lies they continue to tell you about. I mean, the non-proliferation treaty is supposed to be that they're not only not making them, but they're slowly getting rid of them. That's not happening. But it's not just the U.S. The point is that everyone seems to be in a free-for-all as they try to make Iran be the only one seemingly to not even have a civilian program. It's very clear why. It says Tehran in July began stockpiling more low-enriched uranium, exactly, the opposite of what you need to make a bomb, then allowed by the nuclear deal. Why? Because they were taking the first step in a dispute tactic that's outlined in the deal that I'll show you soon. It's just so ridiculous. In the first of five breaches that it has declared, right? Declared. The first of five breaches that it openly declared, walked through, stated, and outlined, and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take this breach, then this breach, then this breach. They're not violations. They're outlined allowable breaches if and when this happens. You don't declare your breaches and then call that a violation. You're cheating or you're trying to be sneaky and make a bomb. You don't declare that thing. It's just silly. It says, in response to U.S. President Trump's sanctions, decision to pull out first of the deal and then their sanctions, which, by the way, is exactly what triggered the five breaches. This is Iran said it would reverse the violations, which have included enriching uranium to a higher level than set in the agreement, which is the point of what we'll get to, and operating prohibited advanced centrifuges, the machines that purify uranium, if the sanctions were removed, which is the point, because they're allowed to do this until everybody else comes back into standing with the deal. Now, before I even get to the JCPOA, let's make it clear, first of all, that here's what the IAEA is saying about what's going on. This is in August. It says the International Atomic Energy Agency and the Islamic Republic of Iran agreed to further reinforce their cooperation and enhance mutual trust to facilitate the full implementation of Iran's Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement and the additional protocol thereto, which is provisionally applied by Iran since January 16th, right at the bat. This sounds a little different than the IAEA coming in and saying, you're breaking this and you're violating that and you're five violations. It's not what's happening. After intensive bilateral consultations, Iran and the IAEA reached an agreement on the resolution of the safeguards implementation issue specified by the IAEA in good faith. In this regard, Iran is voluntarily providing the IAEA with access to two locations specified by them and facilitating the IAEA verification activities to resolve these issues. Dates for the IAEA access and the verification activities have been agreed. They're basically just, they're in compliance. And the next one's the best, but it says in this present context, based on analysis of available information to the IAEA, the IAEA, it's such a free, I hate saying that, does not have further questions to Iran and further requests for access to these locations. Now it says right here, this one is in September 2019. The discussions also included the IAEA's verification and monitoring of Iran's nuclear-related commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. It says the verification, right? Their discussions included the International Atomic Energy Agency verifying Iran's commitments under the JCPOA. That is literally what that says. This is at a time when they were screaming about them violating the deal, which is what we're talking about right now. Okay, now you can see that there's, and this is just a couple examples I took right off the front in regard to Iran, but you can find numerous examples of them saying just that. In fact, I've covered this before, where they come out and they go, they're not violating this or that. Here's the point, starting with number 36, okay? This is the dispute resolution mechanism. Just real quick so you can see the top, just so we're clear, this is the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. This is on the Parliament website, europarl.europa.eu. I'll have this in the show notes as always. Okay. So starting with 36 and we'll go to 26. Okay. This is the point, and this is why this is so important. The reason this is relevant to the discussion is what they're claiming is that that scientist is working on a nuclear bomb, and that's why he was allowed to be killed. The problem is that not only has the IAEA continued to confirm that that's simply not happening, in fact, what Iran is doing within the deal, which gives them the justification to claim that they're breaking it, which they're not, is outlined right here. It says, if Iran believed that any or all of the E3 EU plus 3 were not meeting their commitments under the JCPOA, Iran could refer the issue to the Joint Commission for Resolution. Now, it goes on to do this a few times. You could do it to the commission. Then it says you can do it to a joint commission for consensus. Then you can do it to the ministerial level. The point is there's all these different levels to continue, which they've already done, by the way. Then they wait 15 days for the issue to resolve. And if that doesn't work and it's not resolved, then they go to the ministerial level and they wait 15 days. All this has happened already. Iran has done this every step of the way, and they followed this explicitly and openly, talked about it, tweeted about it, made sure that everybody who cared was aware. Of course, the mainstream media didn't care at all because they know what they're supposed to be doing. But the point is, after I think there's six different layers of continuing to bring it to the next level, and it says, if the issue still has not been resolved to the satisfaction of the complaining participant, which in this case would be Iran, but the dispute mechanism is in place for anybody, and if the complaining participant deems the issue to constitute significant non-performance, which is what is the specific term they use in regard to what this triggers, it says, then that participant, Iran, could treat the unresolved issue as grounds to cease performing its commitments under the JCPOA. So that means, such as the United States government not abiding by the deal or reinitiating sanctions, which actually I believe that does say it right up here. Now, it doesn't, but I hope you guys will read this all through for yourself, because it outlines all the different things that do. One of which is, in fact, violating the agreement with putting sanctions back on Iran, or the U.S. even pulling out of the deal. Once the U.S. removed itself from the deal, that triggered this, because they're no longer performing their commitments under the JCPOA, in whole or in part. Or actually, the participant could treat the unresolved issue, which is the fact that they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They're casting sanctions on Iran. And so it says the Iran is able, within the deal, to cease performing its commitments, which is what's happening. Not violations, but breaches under the deal, in whole or in part, and or notify the UN Security Council that it believes the issue constitutes significant non-performance. You know, you think how ridiculous it is. The United States pulls out of this, acts like the deal's defunct, acts like that this, it's, you know, was never right and it was Obama's thing. And then because nobody else left, because it's obviously working and everyone else is involved in it, the U.S. tries to swing back around and force more things to happen. But I thought they just said it was defunct and it wasn't worth doing. But now they want to be able to dictate actions and be involved. This is the point. Iran is doing this because they're allowed to. And your government and your media are simply lying to you. I mean, really wrap your mind about how ridiculous that is. That it's this obvious. Here's number 26. I think 26 and 36 are what Javad Zarif continues to reference. The EU will refrain from reintroducing or reimposing the sanctions that it has terminated implementing under the JCPOA, without prejudice to dispute the resolution process provided under the JCPOA. That's the process we just read. As there will be no new nuclear-related UN security sanctions, which don't even happen anymore. The U.S. government just does them all unilaterally, which are all illegal. And no new UN nuclear-related sanctions or restrictive measures, which are all happening. The United States will make best efforts in good faith to sustain the JCPOA and to prevent interference with the realization of the full benefit by Iran of the sanctions lifting specified in Annex 2. That was one of the main points of the deal. Complete removal of the sanctions. The point being, the moment that the United States did this, Iran was able to trigger the dispute mechanism in Article 36, and what they're doing now is 100% legitimate. Now, I know there's a lot of just content right there and just talking. This is so incredibly important. I hate the fact that people just glaze over when you talk about this stuff, because this is paramount. The entirety of the Western press is straight up lying to you about how this obvious mechanism works. Because Iran, bad guy, right? Here's your point. They are absolutely breaking that. Even as they're on the way out, as it would appear, Trump administration plans to flood of sanctions on Iran, which is exactly the point, which is why there's, oh, well, there they go. They're not doing that. They're bringing the sanctions back. Jump to 36, and that's where we are. Now, here is this is just this is Prime Minister Gantz takes office for an urgent 24-hour visit to the United States. Interesting, right? Clearly, there's something going on right now to attend very important security meetings that will ensure Israel's continued military edge and to persist in the joint struggle against Iran. Clearly, they weren't involved, right? And obviously, the point is there are, we'll get to at the end here, they're pushing the United States for an even larger military contract, right? Whatever you want to call it, donation. They're literally asking the United States government to make a huge, they're already giving them $38 billion over 10 years, $3.8 billion in this year as you can't feed your families going to Israel who doesn't need it. They're pushing them to give them more money. But as this person's asking, what's the point? What's the purpose of this? And here's what Whitney had to say. They are about to blame a false flag, is what she meant, on Iran. Cyber or bioterror. Working on the story right now. Hope I get it out before. Now, obviously, remember that this is just her opinion. I'm sure there's already people in the comments that are going, you know, you're just making assumptions. Like, she's giving you, a person asked her and gave her opinion. The only reason I say that is because I'm just so tired of how disgusting people are on Twitter. Right? She very clearly does her work and does excellent research. And this is what she sees coming. And by the way, I agree. I just don't, the way this will end up happening is left up in the air for a few factors here. But we've already been talking about the election discussion and how the idea that this is going to be either a bio false flag or a cyber false flag or possibly somehow combining the ideas. The World Economic Forum and different groups are already talking about a cyber bio attack, whatever the hell that actually means. So the point is, once this kicks off and you have Iran to blame, well, it just, everything seems to fit into place. Right? So we could ultimately, they're trying to blame, I would think, something on Iran that relates back to the election. That's just my theory about what we're staring at here. But as he asks as well, so is this assassination the setup for the false flag retaliation they're going to blame on Iran? Right? So when we see something happen, who wouldn't believe that Iran retaliated? So what he's saying there is that ultimately this could be the setup for the U.S. and the Israel, or just Israel, to carry out some kind of massive attack, and they'll just blame it on Iran because everyone would assume they're responding, and that kicks off what they ultimately want to start. And what, as Whitney's been pointing out, and I've been pointing out for years as well, that Israel is openly advocating for war against Iran, and they've stated that they want the United States to be the one to do it. And in fact, they've even stated recently that they want it to happen before Trump leaves office. So maybe that's what we're staring at right now. As Lee points out here, this coming right after the meeting between Pompeo, Netanyahu, and Saudi Arabia means that they aren't even trying to be subtle. Right? I mean, think about, it's just obvious. And I keep pointing out how constantly Pompeo is visiting Israel. I wonder why. Maybe it's because of this. Maybe, just maybe, I don't know. Call me crazy. We'll get to that in a second. But this is real. This is what actually, I couldn't, this is the kind of vitriol that we see on Twitter, that just the gross bottom of the barrel of humanity. Despite this guy being a international rights lawyer, I couldn't believe when I saw this. Here's what I said. Meet the international human rights lawyer who apparently doesn't care about international human rights. No joke, this guy is listed as an international human rights lawyer, political analyst. Here's what he says after Javad Zarif comments about the murder of a scientist. Maybe the car just backfired. You know, accidents do happen. This guy is a disgusting human being. How in the world can you even pretend to care about human rights? Why does that person not have human rights? Understand, criminals have human rights. So even if he's pretending that these people are criminals, he still doesn't care about their human rights. This guy is not good at his job, or he's lying about it, or doesn't, it's just gross. This person deserves to be called out. Not only because he's a human rights lawyer, but because he's a bad human being that just is making a quip about someone's life that was taken illegally under the guise of some kind of action that's completely backed up by nothing other than statements from the Israeli government. Of course, this will be in the show notes. Please let him know what you think about it. Disgusting. And it's not, there was one more actually. I thought I had that lined up. Yeah, oh, right here. This guy's nothing. He's not a human rights lawyer, which is, I just can't believe that. But here's another one just saying, sorry, bro, stop making nukes and recognize Israel now. Ross Gerber. Make sure you look up Ross Gerber too. What's wrong with us? What is wrong with human beings that relish and laugh and joke about the idea of a human being being murdered, let alone somebody who is not even close to what they're saying he is? Someone like a Soleimani. You know, Qasem Soleimani, who was in fact the literal opposite of what they made him out to be. Why? I honestly believe because Donald Trump didn't know who he was listening to what he was being told. And he was told, we have a terrorist in our sights. And he goes, do it. Because that's how easy he was manipulated. That's what I think. That's why we have more. I actually have a video. I wanted to get that out today, but it's a video from Robert about why Trump is the most pro-Israel president in history. Who knows? Maybe Biden will make that better. He'll be even more the pro-president. That sounded terrible. I meant bad. Biden is obviously pro-Israel, grossly so. They all are. And I don't mean it's gross to be pro-Israel. The point is it's gross because of what their government is doing to our country and that they're pro that government despite what they're doing, despite the fact that they're actually selling out U.S. interests, American interests, for the interest of a foreign government. It doesn't matter who that is. That's bad. That shouldn't be okay. But because they claim that it's racist to say that that government is taking things from our country, which I don't know how you could say that's a racist comment. We're talking about governments here. And that's why people are afraid to talk about it. But those days are over. Because anyone out there that tries to paint me as some kind of racist is going to look like a moron. Because I'm not. Because it's so flagrantly obvious that I care more about these voiceless people around the world than most anything else. These people are bad human beings. As Aaron Mate points out, excellent Aaron, a friend of the show, Aaron Mate, New York Times summarizes the chilling message that American officials want to send to Iranian top nuclear scientist with today's assassination. If we can't get him, or if we can get him, then we can get you too. As he points out, and this is the tweet I was referencing, indistinguishable from mafia talk. Well put. Absolutely right. These are government officials. Or in this case, we're talking about the mainstream media. But these are government officials that are taking these actions. And look, that might as well be Pompeo speaking. He threatened the Iranian people with starvation if the government didn't do what they were told. I mean, these are sinister, sociopathic type people. And Aaron's right. I mean, this is disgusting. It says, but some American officials argued, and it's actually coming from officials anyway, that the death of Mr. Fakhrizadeh, the latest in a string of such mysterious killings of Iran's top nuclear, that's just feckless. Gross, have some gumption, New York Times. And I mean, cite the people that are literally reporting to you that they were Iranian, that it's an Israeli attack. Incredible. Mysterious killings of Iran's top nuclear scientist would send a chilling message to the country's other top scientists working on that program. If we can get him, we can get you too. Does that feel like integrity? Does that feel like the good guy? Deep down, you know that's not true. Any actual human being can stare at that, and you may think to yourself, good, screw them, because I don't like them. But even below that, you know it's not okay. And you're just saying, well, I don't care about that evil, bad thing because I don't like Iran, or because I trust Donald Trump, or because fill in the blank. But we all know, somewhere in there, that this is wrong. It's just time to admit that to yourself. But thank you for chiming in, Aaron. This is an important point. All of this is mafia tactics, you know, like starving an entire country until you get what you want, stealing the wheat from people who are starving in Syria, stealing the oil from people who are freezing in Syria, you know, until you get what you want. Strong arm tactics that are just might is right. But that's where we are. Who doesn't see that that's where we are? But going forward on this, we will be following up more on this, whether I do a show with Robert in particular, he does a video about this, we will be coming out with more content very, very soon about what's going on here. But this is another article from Robert who just recently wrote. As he wrote, is Trump looking to attack Iran before leaving office? And if so, how? And I just have to point out how frustrating it is that some people simply just could not read this because they couldn't get past what they thought was the insinuation that we believe Trump didn't win. It's just like, God damn, what's wrong with you people? That's not even what that says, by the way. Two-party illusion. Wake up, guys. We got to be past this ridiculous idea that there's different sides in this obvious authoritarian government. But what we're talking about here is that the idea that if that's going to happen, if so, how? It's like it's a hypothetical discussion about what may happen. Got to get past those political saviors. But the point in this article, which was very, very well done, and to point out right off the bat, Every single thing I'm going to say, and Robert says in this article, is all very well sourced right here. All of it's down there for you to look at, okay? But this is specifically about Israel and Azerbaijan. Now here, while I'm going through this, let me show you this part so you can understand kind of the overall point I'm making with this in relation to the bigger story. Now here, so you could see, is Iran with the red pin. The purple pin is Azerbaijan. Now just take a quick look before I get into this about what's going on around Iran, right? Well, you got Turkey here. Clearly they're on a certain side, regardless of their, you know, condemnation of Israel. It's pretty obvious that they're on that side. Here's Iraq, which is being controlled by the United States and Israel. Here's Saudi Arabia, which is being controlled by the United States and Israel. Here's the United Arab Emirates, that's being controlled by the United States and Israel. Here is Pakistan, which is on the cusp. I would argue they do not have relations with Israel at the moment, but that's something I think is in the works. Here's Afghanistan. And by the way, I could be completely wrong about that. I'm sure there's probably people out there that are way more versed on the Pakistani-Israeli discussion. Feel free and chime in. But the point being is here's Afghanistan, obviously controlled by the United States government, Israel. Here's Turkmenistan, which has currently relations with Israel right now in the same idea that they're all groups that have been pressured into normalization with an entity that they beforehand were obviously essentially, I guess you would say that they were ideologically opposed. So the point being, guys, you can see a systematic toppling of the entities all around Iran, Azerbaijan being one of the last ones. Now, because we're seeing this back and forth between these two countries, or excuse me, I'm saying that incorrectly, Armenia, who's who we're talking about, and the idea that Azerbaijan is being used to take out the other country, because we know that there's the back and forth happening right there, or at least being pressured into it. Now, keeping in mind where we're talking about here, where all these entities are, recognize here's Azerbaijan, and this is the entity we're dealing with in this topic, and what it means in regard to Iran. Now, it says, Israel could also get involved in strikes on Iranian targets. Israel also has the added bonus of using Azerbaijani air bases as a landing pad, which brings us to perhaps the most important tool at the U.S.'s disposal. The relationship between Azerbaijan, which shares a border with Iran to its northwest, and Israel has been especially highlighted during the recent battle over Karabakh by Armenia and Azerbaijan. Now, don't forget, obviously, that's the other point here. The idea of where, I mean, the strategic placement of these allies or, you know, vassal states is just paramount to what's happening right now. Whether we're talking the Greater Israel Project or any number of other agendas. But it says Azerbaijan displayed the usefulness of Israeli military hardware in its battles with Armenia, right? So we already see that it's not a secret, but Azerbaijan is clearly being backed by the Israeli government and also received advocacy from Israel. The close but largely under the table relationship between Israel and Azerbaijan was effectively sealed in February of 2012 with a $1.6 billion arms sale secured by the Baku-based government. And that's very clear, right? This is not, the idea is this is always framed as peace deals, which really what they're doing is gathering, toppling people under their control that they can then exert pressure over people that they want to topple next. This says the arms deal primarily consisted of the purchase of Israeli drone and air defense missile technology. The usefulness of Azerbaijan to Israel goes much beyond the potential billion-dollar arms deals. A WikiLeaks release... A WikiLeaks released cable sent by Donald Liu, the deputy chief for the mission, to the U.S. Embassy in Baku, to the state U.S. Department, revealed the nature of the Azerbaijan-Israel relationship. In the 2009 classified memo, which is right here, always will be in here for you guys to see. I'll read that in a second. It is revealed that the U.S. impression of the relationship between Azerbaijan and Israel is one which benefits Israel greatly, and that there is a mutually shared anti-Iran agenda between them. By the way, for those people that act like there's been nothing that's come out about Israel in these leaks, you're just not looking. The idea still is that this WikiLeaks only leaks what they're given. It's not like they're choosing to seek out and find things about the people that, right? It's a misconception. But nonetheless, there's plenty of things in here that relate back to the bigger picture about Israel, such as this one. But it says the memo revealed that the U.S.'s impression of the relationship between them is one which benefits Israel greatly, and that there is a mutually shared anti-Iran agenda. Of course, that's the point, guys. It is also noted that Azerbaijan has a close relationship with AIPAC, stating, quote, the relationship also affects the U.S. policy insofar as Azerbaijan tries, often successfully, to convince the U.S. pro-Israel lobby to advocate on its behalf. That's the point. That's the kind of influence that we're seeing. But not just in other countries outside the United States, but within the United States, within U.S. Congress. It says, on top of this, the ability of Israel to move Azerbaijan in the direction it chooses would be simple for Israel. In the memo, it said, quote, with some humor, the Israeli DCM told us that Israeli businessmen expressed to her that they prefer corruption in Kazakhstan to that of Azerbaijan, because in Kazakhstan, one can expect to pay exorbitant fees to do business, but those are generally collected at once up front, whereas Azerbaijan, the demands for bribes never cease, right? Clearly one of the good guys, right? Not corrupt at all, right? This is what you'll find in any one of these countries that are toppled by the U.S. and Israel that are allowed, that they get swept into the blob of the good. Good guys, right? The, you know, the kind of things we're talking about, like an Egypt entity or a Brazil entity, that are some of the worst out there today. Where's my favorite dictator, Trump famously said when Sisi walked in. I'm just, you know, that's just on its face. Like, we know you're a bad guy, but you're our bad guy. That's the classic U.S. idea. Kissinger has said stuff in the past, right? That he's a bad something, but he's our bad something, right? This is classic. So it's not really about doing good. It's about controlling things for your benefit, while using good and virtue as your cover, a very thin veneer that's not really holding anymore. But it says, on top of this, the ability of Israel to move them in a direction it chooses, I just read that, it says, in an article written in 2012 for Foreign Policy magazine, the author Mark Perry claims that he was informed by a U.S. senior administration official that Israel had purchased an airfield in Azerbaijan. Although Azerbaijan has publicly made it clear that they have ruled out use of its territory by Israel to launch a strike on Iran, they never stated Israel could not land in Azerbaijan following any potential strikes. Very important to consider how this plays into the bigger picture of what we're actually dealing with here. Circling Iran and toppling countries that they need to control the entity. Right? And I mean, think of, we're literally watching Israel assassinate nuclear scientists right now. Now, I hope you'll read through these yourself. So here's the actual document from WikiLeaks. It says, much like Israel, Azerbaijan perceives Iran as a major, even existential security threat. And the two countries' cooperation flows from this shared recognition. The U.S.-born Israeli ambassador in Baku, Arthur Lenk, often conveys his country's empathy by remarking with dark humor that if he had the chance to exchange neighborhoods with Azerbaijan, I wouldn't do it. Even open sources have identified an extensive relationship between the countries. Intelligence services that even predated the presidency of the president that they're currently there, meaning it's always been something that's been pushed. And it only stands to reason that this remains as a major area of cooperation, which both sides naturally seek to downplay. Right, this is 2009. Right, think about how long ago that was, and think about what's currently happening. These things have been. This is a chess game. Now, don't forget, we just mentioned this one as well. Right, here is a Black Hawk helicopter crash in Sinai, kills 8, mostly Americans. A multinational peacekeeping force operating in Egypt. I laughed at that last time. A multinational peacekeeping force. Right? This is insinuating that they need military force to keep peace. That's the opposite of what's happening. Their military presence is literally what's creating the conflicts. We need to see this by now. That's why the so-called war on terror has only increased the problem, because that was the point. The more militarization, the more growth, the more military-industrial complex, the bigger the problem. It's only continued to increase because it's increasing their control. Or their ability to do what they want, when and where they want to. It says in total, 8 were killed, including 6 Americans. One American reportedly survived the crash and was evacuated to an Israeli hospital. That seems odd until you realize that, first of all, Israel's close, but there's plenty of other places they could go, but it's because this is an Israeli operation. The MFO has been deployed in Sinai since the 1980s, guess why? In order to monitor Egypt's 1979 peace deal with Israel. So it either sounds like a spying operation or something a little more severe, more sinister, and they were something, I mean, it's odd how many weird, just unexplained crashes we keep seeing. There's so much going on around this that we just don't see. But at the end of the day, you see the Israeli government aspect to all of these things, where Americans are dying, where Americans are losing money, where Americans are losing everything they own, right? All these things are tying back in so many ways. And this is one of the things I think is a really big point to all this. This is from CNN, believe it or not, from November 13th of this year. Pentagon senior advisor, and I know why they did this, because they're trying to slant this as a bad thing, right? This is a bad guy thing. What they're doing is it's anti-Semitic. By what? Implying that the lobby, whose literal job is to pay politicians to do what they want to achieve an end goal, and saying that the Israeli lobby does that too, is somehow racist? Yeah, we dealt with this with the Ilhan Omar thing. That was so flagrant, and they exposed their hands so clearly, because what she got stood up and said was lobbyists, they work for money, right? It's all about the money for lobbyists. But see, that's an okay statement. Nobody cares about that. But the moment you say the Israeli lobby, it's all about the money. Ooh, you're a racist. Why exactly? See, the problem is they're oversensitive because there's something going on here, guys. There's obviously something happening. And when I mean something, I mean that this entity that ties back to the Israeli government is clearly has an obvious, undue, and illicit influence over the actions of American politicians and the end goal of our policy. Just like this CNN article is saying that the senior Pentagon advisor is claiming. At what point can we stop pretending like this is just totally ridiculous? It says a new senior advisor at the Pentagon repeatedly said that the United States' support for Israel was the result of Israeli lobby money. Well, that's obvious. That's not even a criminal. I mean, I think the idea of lobbyists as they stand are criminal because it's legal bribery. That's what it is. So, but the point is, aside from that being gross and wrong as it stands anyway, this is what it's supposed to be. Right? Lobbyists use money to influence policy. It's just so dumb that it's bad when it's about Israel. And he accused prominent officials, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, of becoming very, very rich from their support for Israel. Now, see, here's where it gets more interesting, because I think it's bad that this happens at all. But what they're saying is that these politicians, such as Mike Pompeo, you know, an open Zionist, Christian Zionist, whatever that actually means, the point is that he's accusing them of basically benefiting themselves, enriching themselves at the expense of what's best for America. What does that sound like? Oh, that's right. It sounds like exactly what he says Iran's government is doing. And you know, even whether they are or not, think about how stupid it is for Pompeo to be the one pointing fingers while at least this senior Pentagon advisor is saying, you're doing that. You are enriching yourself from foreign governments as you're supposed to be representing the American people. And in fact, at the expense of what Americans actually want. It says retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor, who was appointed as senior advisor to newly installed acting defense secretary Christopher Miller this week, made the comments in two media appearances in 2012 and 2019. So it wasn't just one offhand remark. Clearly, it's his opinion. He says, quote, you have to look at the people that donate to those individuals. McGregor said this in a September 2019 interview when he asked if then National Security Advisor John Bolton, obviously another one, and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham wanted war with Iran. Mr. Bolton has become very, very rich, he said, and is in the position he's in because of his unconditional support for the Israeli lobby. He is their man on the ground in the White House. That's coming from a senior Pentagon official. Wake up, people. The idea is that, yes, Bolton was that. That's exactly why Bolton and people like Rudy Giuliani are being paid to speak at MEK rallies, which is a terrorist organization that was taken off the terrorist list by Hillary Clinton. And they're the entity, surprise, surprise, that they're trying to push in to take over Iran. Not a secret. Talked about it 100 times. The MEK is the group that they claim has popular support. Nobody supports them in Iran. They're a fringe cult. And I'm not abusing that word. They're crazy. The kind of things where they keep monitors and tabs on the people involved in their community, whether they have to report their sexual activity with their partners, really crazy stuff, as well as the fact that they're actually the kind of entity that the U.S. government pretends Iran and their government are. They are religious extremists. And the way that they act is the opposite of what Americans would want to support. But Bolton and Rudy Giuliani and Elaine Chao, I believe, and numerous people have given speeches for them, paid tens of thousands of dollars to stand up and promote it. John Bolton famously said, by 2019 or 2020, we'll be celebrating in Tehran or whatever, right? I mean, they're constantly telling them that, and they're sitting in the front row. And so that's the point. These people are being paid and enriching themselves at the support of foreign entities at the expense of Americans, at the literal expense, because you're paying for these foreign adventurism aspects. He says, quote, "The same thing is largely true for Mr. Pompeo. He has aspirations to be president." Oh, that's a horrible thought. "He has his hands out for money from the Israeli lobby, the Saudis, and others." We can clearly see that happening. An outspoken critic of American foreign policy and endless wars, McGregor also said that the Israeli lobby has enormous influence on Congress and accused the lobby of wanting to instigate military strikes with Iran in 2012 interview with the Russian state media network RT. Right? As we're reading from the U.S. state network, CNN, right? It's funny how they just don't want to tell you that. They're all state-owned and run, and that's all of these. All the CNN, these are not independent outlets. But the point is, that's not a secret. Israel's government and numerous Israeli politicians are openly advocating for strikes on Iran. So there's plenty of U.S. people doing the same thing. So the point is that the Israeli lobby is obviously trying to exert their influence over the U.S. Congress to create what they want. Now, again, that's what lobbyists do. But the problem is they're trying to push them to commit illegal actions, which is what we just saw. Whether they were behind it or whether they are complicit or they just ignore it, what we just saw was a flagrantly illegal action with the assassination of a scientist. I think the American Israeli... It's a quote. "I think the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, and its subordinate elements," which there are numerous, "are affiliated elements that represent enormous quantities of money that over many years have cultivated an enormous influence in power in Congress." Exactly. But let's ignore what the Pentagon advisor has to say. I think you've got a lot of people on the Hill who fall into two categories. One category is that is interested in money and wants to be reelected, and they don't want to run the risk of the various lobbies that are pushing military action against Iran to contribute money to their opponents. Pretty damn clear, guys. Well, here's another one. Georgia lawmaker says Israeli government asked me for anti-boycott law she introduced. I know this isn't conspiracy theory. She, in fact, said this publicly in front of Congress. Yeah, you know why? Because she was... Just why this is a really, really interesting breakdown, that this is exactly what we're concerned about. The undue influence of the Israeli government over policy in this country that has nothing to do with what's good for you, that is actually done at your expense. A Georgia state legislator who has pushed the law, Georgia, which I find interesting anyway, like the fact that this much influence in Georgia. I mean, realize how much influence we kept talking about before all this, that Israel's government had tied to the election. We talked about this in regard to their predictions, but we talked about the software, all these different things that are tied back to Israeli entities. Unit 8200, right? As we're pointing to Dominion and Smartmatic, we also know that a lot of these entities, including we talked about Carbine 911 and the different 911 call centers, which is already trying to be pushed in around the country because of the supposed cyber attacks that brought down the call centers. I mean, it's everywhere that we can see undue influence from a foreign government over everything happening in this country. I say everything, you know, in a broad sense, like just, you know, the idea is that there's so many things we can see happening. And it's not a secret. But anytime you want to argue that that is what it looks like, you become a racist. It says, a Georgia state legislator who has pushed the new state law opposing boycotts of Israel, which is an unconstitutional thing on its face. There's no way you can argue that's not unconstitutional. Telling somebody that they're not allowed to boycott something, whatever it is unconstitutional. But she's pushed for that, testifying at a hearing that the Israeli consulate, quote, asked me to introduce an amendment to the law, and she did. So maybe she believes in it. Maybe she heard him out and said, that's a good idea. But it boils down to the fact that a foreign entity came in and said, we want you to do this as a politician, and she did it. And by the way, it's a law that's inherently unconstitutional. This is, as far as I'm considered, illegal. The lawmaker appeared at the hearing in March with an Israeli consular officer seated at her side and introduced him to the House committee. So not only did the Israeli government ask her to pass a law that benefited them, that was unconstitutional and actually undermined and removed the rights from American people, then she came to testify about it with a member of the Israeli consular sitting next to her. State Representative Deborah Silcox made her comments a month after Benjamin Netanyahu bragged that Israel was promoting these laws exactly. Yeah, because as I always tell you, the Israeli government will happily brag to their people that they have this control over the U.S. government. But of course, when it comes out on our side of it, they don't want us to see it, right? Netanyahu is happy to brag about it. Of course, we're promoting these laws. Look at what we got the U.S. government doing. Netanyahu tweeted this on February 12th. Here's the first part. It says, this is from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Whoever boycotts us will be boycotted. Right? See, of course, because no one's worried about being boycotted by Israel. What they're talking about is using their entities like the U.S. government against everybody. Right? Why would they care if Israel boycotted you? The problem is that the U.S. government, which has ties and influence all around the world, if they boycott you and they use their influence and pass laws against you, well, that's what they're talking about. But it gets better. It says the UN Human Rights Council is a biased body that is devoid of influence. Yet they still use it when they want to. See how dumb that is? They still use it when they say Iran's violating this UN treaty. Of course, it only matters when they want it to. Not for nothing have I already ordered the severing of ties with it. But here's the point. It was also not for nothing that the American administration has taken this step together with us. In recent years, we have promoted laws in most U.S. states, which determine that strong action is to be taken against whoever tries to boycott Israel. Anybody misunderstanding that? They have promoted laws in U.S. states. Isn't that interference in our political process? Yes, it is. Which determines, right? That actions are taken against you if you embody your constitutional right. Why? Because Israel says so. It says, therefore, this body is unimportant. Instead of the organization dealing with human rights, it only tries to disparage Israel. Why? Because Israel continues to murder people. Yeah, no big deal. We strongly reject this contemptible effort. Behold, as Whitney says, the real foreign meddler. Pretty gross. But, says the Israeli government's intervention was first reported by the Council on American Islamic Relations in March press release. I learned about it from an interview with a lawyer who was suing the state of Georgia, which was posted on Empire Files by Abby Martin. This is the backstory. Because we've already talked on that, but I'll show you the image here in a second where Abby's dealing with this in regard to Georgia specifically, where she was, we'll get to it in a second. 32 states, it says, including Georgia in 2016. Have adopted laws denying state funds to those who advocate boycotting Israel. 32 states have adopted a law that four different federal judges, including in the Supreme Court, has ruled unconstitutional, as well as the fact that it's flagrantly unconstitutional, regardless of what a judge says. They're telling you that you can't boycott. You can boycott whatever you want except Israel, though, because that's off the rule. No, that's not allowed. Now, so it says that state funds, there are places where, as individuals, we already talked about after Hurricane Katrina, people were given relief funds and they had to sign a document that said they wouldn't boycott Israel before they got relief funds for a hurricane. How do you not see what's happening here, guys? 32 states have adopted something that is contrary to the Constitution. How do we not see how far off the rails we are? This is because a foreign entity is driving this policy. Do we really believe that these people, if our government believed in our Constitution, that they would be doing this? The U.S. Senate has passed a bill urging other states to do so. The, quote, Combating BDS Act of 2019, something that Donald Trump has aggressively pushed forward. Something that's inherently unconstitutional, but because it's pro-Israel, doesn't matter. Even his followers, doesn't matter. Last summer, the Forward reported that an organization that has helped draft these laws received a grant from the Israeli government. Oh, that's weird. I wonder why. I wonder why they would pay off somebody involved with drafting these laws. Do you see that every step of this process, there's Israeli government money influencing our politicians? Why is that okay? I mean, look, insert this as France. If France, at every step of the way, was paying politicians, was influencing people drafting the bills, was continuing to threaten people and institutions that were going against them, that would be a huge deal. And France would be called out in the same way. The same way I call out France and Macron specifically for being a feckless ruler, someone who is allowing people to overcome their country, people allowing people that are protesting for their rights to be attacked and disparaged. I mean, that is what we do here. The fact that they want to make it out to be something that's that I can't stop focusing on Israel, despite my 7 months of COVID coverage, right? It's stupid. The fact is, it's obvious to anybody with a brain and two brain cells to rub together. We can see that this is not okay. In February 2020, Abby Martin, and I did cover this on the show, was disinvited from delivering a keynote speech at an academic conference at Georgia State University. Nothing to do with Israel. Losing out on a $1,000 honorarium. Why? Because she refused to sign an Israeli loyalty oath. That's exactly what it was. I mean, I don't even care what you want to call it or what it looks like. She had to sign a document that said she wouldn't boycott Israel before she gave an academic speech at Georgia, in Georgia State University. The only thing that shows you is that the Israeli government has exerted its power over Georgia State University. And she had to affirm that she would not boycott Israel, which is her constitutional right. So she's suing Georgia State University as we speak. A month after that suit was filed, Representative Deborah Silcox testified before the Georgia House and the Governmental Affairs Committee in favor of a bill she had introduced to raise the floor on the contracts governed by the law, basically trying to change the amount of money they're talking about so it would affect whether or not she could be looked into for dealing with in regard to Israel from 1,000 to 100,000. It says Martin's attorney says raising the floor for contracts is an attempt to get Martin's suit thrown out as moot. And when $100,000 is at stake, contractors are far less likely to challenge the law. So they're trying to bend this to their will, and it's dishonest. So she does not, I mean, it's so very clear. It says at the hearing on March 11th, Silcox can be seen sitting and chatting with a man in the front row before she testifies, then introducing him to the committee. And you can see the images right here. Now it says, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to introduce briefly Harold Hirschberg, who's here with me with the Israeli consulate. I appreciate him coming down this morning to join us. This is a U.S. politician. You're passing laws that are about American people. Yes, of course, it has to do with violating their rights about a foreign country, but why is the foreign country involved in the processes of our political system? You know that answer. We've already shown you. Silcox goes on to say that Israel asked her to raise the limit. So here we are, where they're in a position that she's there because of Israel, where she's passing a bill that is about violating our constitutional rights and stopping you from boycotting Israel. Then she tries to raise this limit in regard to the money so they will stop looking at it. And it turns out that Israel asked her to do it. Why? Because they're trying to stop this from being uncovered and pointed out. It says, quote, we have had some issues on a small scale with this, and so the Israeli consulate and a number of people have asked me to raise the limits. Harold Hirschberg is listed as the director of government and policy political affairs for the Israeli consulate in Atlanta. So the director of government and political affairs was behind this woman and guiding her on what she should do in regard to you and your life. How about you guys reach out to Ms. Silcox if you're in her area and tell her that she no longer represents you because she's in fact representing a foreign government instead of you. In fact, relying on what the foreign government wants before it actually decides on what's best for you and whether or not it violates your constitutional rights. This is despicable, guys. These people need to be called out. Now, I've discussed the Abby Martin aspect of this, and I hope you'll look into it further, because she takes a lot of courage for her to put this all on the line, and this is a big deal. And a lot comes when this stuff happens, and she's being, you know, anybody that does what we do is getting attacked by these people. Whether we're talking about, you know, U.S. government entities that don't like that we're calling out their foreign policy, or Israeli government entities that don't like that we're calling out their murder and crimes, or same thing with the U.S. government, or any other aspect of that. They don't like that we're calling these things out, and so they come after us. So people like Abby need your support. But as we're staring at government entities telling us that they're passing laws at the behest of the Israeli government, as we're watching Pentagon senior advisors tell us that some of the most powerful people in our government are in fact getting very rich off of that money coming from the lobby, we just need to see what's really happening here, guys. As they literally tell us that they're doing this in most states. and affecting your constitutional rights. Now, on top of all of that, yes, as I said, Israel is discussing long-term military aid. Even more long-term and large. It says Israeli officials are already looking to discuss long-term military aid with the president-elect. Even though technically I don't think that's happened yet, we're still, it's pretty clearly seeming to be the case. I'll touch on it more. I mean, Donald Trump just said that he would back down if the Electoral College decided that Joe Biden was the choice, which seems to challenge like everything that they're being said on one side of this argument. But, you know, I'll wait and report what actually happens, unlike the mainstream media. But they're asking for more money. $3.8 billion a year when you can't feed your family, when lines in Texas for bread lines are around the corner, like huge, 7 hours for things like this. Or that was testing. But there's huge lines for this stuff. I just don't understand how we can justify giving money like this in the middle of what we're being told is a pandemic, while people are being forced into this because of government actions. But regardless of why it's happening, people are struggling. Their businesses are gone. They can't feed their families. And we're giving $3.8 billion to a war crime committing government that does not care about you or your constitutional rights. It says an Israeli defense source told the Post that a new multi-billion-dollar package, military aid package, understand that they do not need our military aid. But it would be something Israel wants to discuss with Biden right away. And this will be a hugely telling point, whatever he does in this regard. The current aid package to Israel is massive. It allocates $3.8 billion to Israel in military aid every year until 2027. Do you realize how much money that is? Now they want more. The deal was signed in 2016 under the Obama administration, and Israel received its first $3.8 billion in 2018. Quote, "We will want to talk about a new package and program. The new plan will need to take into account the changing threats and challenges we face in the middle." Why is it the U.S. government's responsibility to pay them based on how much they think they're at threat in the Middle East? That comes from your pocket. It's despicable. Now, in that regard, in general, while we're talking about all these things, and in the middle of all of this, Robert has continued to report on the fact that Israel has not stopped displacing people, destroying people's homes, demolishing people's. This is the exact thing that they said wouldn't happen. Exactly what Donald Trump said was over, the deal of the century, and it's no longer. And it immediately continued. In fact, the exact location that was outlined in this supposed deal for Palestinians has already been continued to be taken. This is ongoing. As he says, massive home demolition campaign ongoing in Jerusalem. About 1,000 Palestinians made homeless just this year due to demolitions. Displacement. For the third time, possibly?
Early nobody is
Let's listen to what he says right here.
Early nobody is talking about this. Today, a massive campaign launched of home demolitions in neighborhoods like Sur Bahr and others, which I visited myself and seen some of the destruction which has been caused in these places. Just to paint a picture for you of how bad this is, specifically this year, it was projected that this year would be the worst on record in terms of, statistically, in terms of house demolitions and the amount of Palestinians made homeless since the records began. So we're literally looking at a situation here where right now, this was the updated statistics were November 3rd by Betselem, 340 Palestinians in Jerusalem were made homeless. This included around 180 children, okay? Over 340 people made homeless. And this doesn't make any headlines in the so-called undivided capital of Israel. That's what we're told. It's undivided. And they're going ahead and bulldozing these structures. Literally, some of these are like old structures which basically overlook the Dome of the Rocks, Masjid al-Aqsa. And there's nothing about this. Nobody cares. It's like, you know, the whole world is deaf and silent. Whilst that's going on, we got massive destruction of Bedouin homes. Also, in the Al-Naqab, the Negev region, which is located inside of what is now Israel. And so these are Bedouin Palestinian Arabs who are being pushed out of their homes inside of Israel. Okay, nobody talks about it. Nobody whatsoever. Okay? And in the case of Jerusalem and East Jerusalem, most of Palestinians live. And by the way, the population of Jerusalem, 40% of it are Palestinians. But there is a specific program put forth to ethnically cleanse them. And I'm not making this up. This has literally been the case, and they introduced bills time and time again since the occupation of East Jerusalem in 1967 and the annexation in 1980 against international law, done nothing about, by the way. Nobody's even touched Israel for this. In fact, the United States Trump administration recognized it as legitimate, right, against international law. And they literally implement these...
It's just hard to watch this stuff, guys. You know, I mean, it's sickening to me that we can actually be in a place where this is allowable, where people in this country are going, yeah, that's justified because of some baseless thing that's floated by your government that's not backed up by any facts, right? Whatever that would be, right? They're all, I mean, think about how stupid it is that we're at a point where not too long ago, people were arguing that Palestine never existed or arguing that, you know, any number of things that are just ridiculous. That everyone that lives there is a terrorist. Like, I remember people like, I think it was Laura Loomer or somebody that actually argued that. I think that was in a debate with I'm forgetting his name now. Moat, you know, most the talk show, George Galloway. She did this, they were having like a little debate. I'm not kidding, literally argued that every single person there is a terrorist. And it's just incredible how either willfully naive or just dishonest people can be. It's half of them are children, the largest civilian populated area on the planet. And we're just allowing it to happen. And I share Robert's disgust that nobody is caring to discuss this. It's interesting to note real quick that Biden cheated is trending on Twitter. It's pretty interesting. I mean, you see, I don't care what side you're on. If you're going to pretend that there wasn't cheating on the Biden side, then you're ridiculous. But by the way, I pointed out manipulations and cheating on every side, every damn election. Our system's broken. And that's why I'm always saying vote no one. Because guess what, everyone out there that thinks you were stolen from, it happens every single year. Because our system is broken. Because these politicians are liars and they're always trying to manipulate you. I wouldn't be surprised if Trump was involved with some kind of big theater. They're all meant to happen this way. Remember, we talked about it in the beginning where it's WikiLeaks even showed us that Clinton made sure that Trump was one of the people that ended up on that stage. I wouldn't put it past this being the plan. That rolled in the big COVID illusion and all the, I mean, think of, none of this would have been allowed in this way. It to such a degree if Trump wasn't there. I mean, realize what all those other people would have done if it was Clinton that was here. We would have revolution most likely because people would not have taken that. But half of this whole community was completely convinced that Trump was not going to let this happen. Well, here we are, guys. It's here. Whether it was a trick and he didn't mean to, or he was, you know, whatever, it didn't work. We're here. And now it seems that Biden's going to step in. So at the end of the day, we need to see that this is just how it goes over and over and over. And as long as you continue to play your part in this broken illusion of the system of democracy, it's going to continue to happen exactly like this. They'll let you think you're just about to change everything, and then it goes the other way. The only time we can actually change this stuff and, you know, help the people like these Palestinians that are being attacked and disparaged and just... their lives destroyed, like in many other places around the world. The only time we can actually change this, only way, is if we continue to stand outside of that broken paradigm. We need to start thinking outside the box, guys. We want to go to another 4-year election and just wait and see it all happen over again, and we can act like we're outraged and baffled that they can't believe this. I didn't know there was cheats every single year. Israeli occupation forces attempt to brutally remove a Palestinian they shot from an ambulance. This is not a joke. How does anybody rationalize that? Like, I would love to talk to the disgusting human being that pretends like what they did right there was okay. The same thing I've shown you 1,000 times, where they're dealing with journalists or with other medics, where they shoot their gun right over their head, or they hit them with tear gas, or they throw them to the ground, or they knock the person out of the stretcher. This happens every single time. There's no, anywhere else in the world this would happen, it would be completely called out. I mean, it doesn't even matter if that person is a terrorist. The idea of what they're doing there is unbelievable. It's we are in this country, specifically in the United States, we pretend and we tell ourselves that we have certain standards, and that even when you have a crime committed, that you need to go through due process and you need to be proven, you're innocent until proven guilty. We love to say these things, and I don't think any of us actually believe them. And I know we're not talking about the United States here, but the point is we have these values that we're pretending we're spreading around the world. And look at this. This is our chief ally. These are the people training some numerous locations of police in this country. Why do we think we're seeing the exact actions begin to take place? You do not raid an... And look, if let's say this was a criminal that they wanted to keep track of or follow the van. Right? Go find where they're going. Follow him or take him in a different view. Like, what they're trying to do there is drag him out after he's been shot. And they're hitting people and pushing people. These people are criminals. I already showed you the video with Robert where he talked to one of these people who openly said that he doesn't care about their lives. But of course, that's racist, because the truth is racist when it comes to this discussion. As he says, breaking, Israel has arrested a 60-year-old Palestinian man from a city in Negev for a post he made on social media. Right? You know, the only democracy in the Middle East, as we keep being told, except you can't say certain things online without being arrested. 2,000 plus homes demolished per year, and the Palestinians with Israeli citizenship now arrest for Facebook posts. Israel's moving forward with their Jerusalem settlement plan. You know, that the thing that they literally said wasn't going to happen, the way that Donald Trump was screaming about the plan. And this is just more displacement, more illegal actions, more things that are out explicitly... that they're explicitly illegal, according to the United Nations. You know, the very thing. Of course, they say, well, they're defunct and we don't listen to them. Okay, so what's happening here then? Are we only supposed to Israel just does what it wants because the international community is biased against its illegal actions? The only reason this is allowed to happen is because the U.S. government allows it to happen. And why do you think they're doing that? Literally at their expense, or specifically the expense of the country, which is you. It's happening because I don't think they have a choice. I think there's obvious influence. And whether we're talking about an Epstein type thing, which we've already told you is obvious ties to Mossad as well as CIA, that we're talking about a blackmail program. That could be what we're dealing with, where they have all kinds of blackmail over these people, where they get them in very nefarious positions, doing gross things with things they shouldn't be doing, and then they use that over them. Or any number of other things, whether there's people that are involved that are just Christian Zionists that care more about foreign entities than they do about our country. I mean, these things are allowable conversations. None of it has to do with race or anything other than governments and actions and crimes. That's what it has to do with. And the point is, the UN is very open about this. Illegal. Doesn't matter. So just continue to realize the absurdity of even the United States continuing to pretend they're using United Nations sanctions or specifically mandates or resolutions, using them to say, look, Iran has to do this, or, oh, look at this, Russia is violating this or that, and then ignoring it when it comes to Israel. You are not allowed to pick and choose which ones you want to abide by. You either do or you don't. And I get the argument that the UN is something that, I'm not arguing that we should be blindly listening to what the UN has to say anyway, but if you're going to be involved in it, you are or you aren't. You don't get to play it halfway. That's the point. And it was interesting, we just saw this, Netanyahu reportedly requested U.S. permission to build an illegal settlement in Jerusalem, which I don't know whether that was intended to blame it on U.S. so he's not responsible, or, you know, whatever it is, wanted to make it look like they're still kind of, you know, subordinate to the U.S. government, which I don't think is the case. In any case, we're talking about something that was explicitly illegal and explicitly outlined as not going to happen in the so-called deal of the century. I guess that's just no longer happening, despite the fact that it's still on Trump's resume for successes, though. Don't forget that. Well, we already seen a bunch of strikes and attacks and continuing. You know, it's weird how this just kind of stopped during the middle of this COVID thing. And it's suddenly all starting again. It's just funny how every time you look at these, it's a joke. It's fireworks exploding in the sky. And we're talking about something that one of the leading munitions experts in Israel has openly stated that the Iron Dome is an illusion. It's fireworks. And I argue that doesn't mean they don't have rockets, but it means they can pop off things in the air whenever they want to argue that they shot a rocket, then use that as the justification to carry out some military action and pretend like they're doing it in defense. Does anybody believe that wouldn't happen, that they're not capable of such a grand deception? It's just basic stuff. But as he says, not only in Gaza, they're also bombing Syria, right? This was on November 18th. Did you see this in the media? Does it no longer matter that foreign countries are bombing other foreign countries? That should be massive news, but not if it's Syria, not if it's Iraq, not if it's in these countries that they're bad guys and we don't want you to continue to see that Israel is flagrantly violating international law and we openly support that. Nah, we'll just not talk about it because we're journalists. It's pathetic. Syria under attack. Israeli airstrikes on Syria this morning have killed at least 10 people. I mean, I feel guilty for not covering this on the days it's happening. Like, we're getting so buried in so many things. These 10 people deserve to be talked about. 10 innocent people that were murdered by an Israeli airstrike in Syria because the U.S. government fecklessly allows it. It's disgusting. Anybody out there that argues this is acceptable, you're a bad person. These are innocent people that are in this country. Like, think about how stupid it is we continue to pretend that we're fighting for the Syrians, fighting for the Iranians, and then they go murder Syrians and murder Iranians, and we go, oh, Iran, bad guy. Syria, bad guy. Because that totally makes sense. These attacks are not only unprovoked, but are an act of war and a violation of Syria's sovereignty, which they don't care about. Imagine the international uproar if Syria did this routinely to Israel. Exactly. It would be the war. It would be an instantaneous war. We know what would happen. They would bomb them. The United States would act on behalf of Israel because that's what they do. Israeli airstrike on after that kills 19 people on the 26th. Okay, so we're talking about the 18th. They killed 10 people in Syria. No one cares about it in the mainstream media. A week later, about a week exactly, they killed 19 more people in Syria. Nobody wants to talk about it. And even because of COVID-19, people like me who might have been before are distracted by other things. Maybe that's the point. But this is why I'm so thankful to have Robert on the team now, because he is doing an excellent job on talking about these things. But this is disgusting. You just do the math on how much is happening here and how illegal this is and how much, you know, just the human rights and the international law. These are criminals, guys. And there's no way to see this any other way. Now, the UN is also making sure we understand that the Israeli siege on the Gaza Strip is costing $16.7 billion. This is the reality. And it's all about control and the agenda. And what suffers are the people. You know, the very people they so sanctimoniously pretend to be fighting for as they starve and beat up and rape and murder and destroy. But don't worry, though, because Secretary Pompeo came out and made sure we knew that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, because that's what we all care about, right? Who cares about the children you're murdering? Let's make sure that we aren't allowed to talk about Zionists committing these crimes because you want to make that out to be anti-Semitic, despite the fact that Palestinians are Semitic. Who cares, right? Don't think into anything. Just blindly listen and do what you're told. The U.S. is committed to countering the global beat. So they're committed to countering a legal action going through the legal processes. Think about how they always are talking about this and saying, you know, don't take illegal actions, don't riot and control, go through the legal process, stand up and protest and go through. Well, that's what that is, guys. And the moment they did that, they recognized the threat of actually boycott. In case you don't know, by the way, BDS is boycott, divestments, and sanctions. Meaning that we should boycott this illegal government that's murdering people. We should convince people to divest from their country so they're not benefiting from that illegal action. And we should sanction them for their crimes. That's what that means. All of those are legal actions based on crimes. And they're literally acting like us trying to create a legal standing, which we already have, is racist. Because they want to make it out to be some secret attack on Jewish people. Now look, is there people within the BDS movement that hate Jewish people? I'm sure. I bet you could find people that hate any kind of group in every possible thing you could find. You could find any group out there and you'll probably find variations of all kinds of people. You know, that's called living on the planet. The problem is that the BDS movement as itself, as an entity, is not that. But if we're going to start making it an entity about what any one person within it feels, well, we're going to change everything. I mean, that's just straight up stupid. But that's what they want to do. Zionism is a political movement. And in fact, there's plenty of Jewish people, Orthodox Jews in Israel, who are like huge organizations that are protesting, saying that Zionism is anti-Israel, anti-Judaism. And the idea is that Zionism is taking what Judaism is and using it for political ends. Right, the concept of Judaism in this regard is there, and specifically in regard to Israel as an entity or as a location, is they were supposed to wait for the return of the Messiah, which, unless I'm confused, hasn't happened yet. See, that's why Orthodox Jews are pointing out Zionism as the problem, because they're bastardizing their religion and they don't like it. That's why you'll see videos of even Orthodox Jews being beat up by the IDF, because it's not about what they pretend it's about. Zionism is a real big problem, because what they're doing is it's racist. That's what's so incredible about it. What they are as an entity is inherently racist and prejudicial against everything that's out there. That's the wrong word. But the point is, they're inherently, look at the apartheid state. Look at what they're doing, and what they're creating. Openly saying, this is the state of the Jews alone. That's a direct quote from Netanyahu. But we're the racist ones. At the end of the day, it comes back to the government and the actions they're taking. And if we can't see that they're contrary to what we believe and contrary to international law, then you're just not looking. But thank God for Mike Pompeo fighting for a foreign entity on our behalf. Great man. Now, to wrap it up on a few other points here, I want to just share something Hussein al-Bukhadi pointed out. And I'm not going to, I'm afraid to even click on it, because there's a graphic image. But it says the U.S.-led Saudi coalition just bombed a horse stable in Yemen, right? As somebody just, you know, macabrely joked, oh, right, because they want to make sure they don't attack with their cavalry. Cavalry. I mean, how stupid is it? You couldn't argue that bombing those horses was some kind of military agenda. It's vindictive, just like bombing their food, bombing their water supply, bombing their fishing vessels. None of this is allowed. None of it's legal. And the U.S. government is acutely involved in this. They're leading it. And of course, it has to do with the larger agenda with Israel and Saudi Arabia in regard to the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. And all these different things are trying to control the strategic points and starving an entire country to get to it. Now, I'm going to share this in the show notes so you can find it. There's an image of a specific bomb that was used by the U.S.-led Saudi coalition. He's curious what kind it was and where it came from, so you can check it out and help out his work. Hussein al-Bukhadi is on the ground, sort of like Robert's on the ground and dealing with these things where he is. Hussein is in Yemen. He is there on the ground telling you the truth of what he sees. I'll point this out. He was the one that broke the story back about the, MK82? I forget the kind of bomb, but the bomb that was used on that school bus that became all the news because Jim Carrey made a cartoon about it. Except the fact there was at least three other school buses that were bombed after that that nobody even cared about, except us here at The Last American Vagabond. But this is what we're dealing with. This is okay by the U.S. government and their Saudi allies to just murder horse stables and bomb families and weddings and funerals and then circle back and bomb people trying to help them, called a double tap, which is what they do every time, which is obviously a crime. Sickening. On top of that, breaking, Russia requests the United States to refrain from violating Russian territorial waters, reserves the right to retaliate. Some stuff's going on, guys. I think what most people can see here in regard to Russia or China are these entities that are the adversaries, that the United States is clearly losing its clout in regard to the just foreign policy. Doesn't mean they're not powerful militarily. They don't have mostly predominant control over the dollar and the financial system, which is going the other direction too. But this is interesting, as Russia's standing up and just kind of putting its foot down and saying, well, it shows you that there's a kind of a turn of the tides happening. And if this is serious, as the U.S., the U.S. violates their waters all the time and then flips out when Russia gets anywhere near their side of the world. It's just so ridiculous. So, as they set this down, it seems to be an indicator that we're getting some kind of, coming to a head here of some kind. But on top of all of that, we can see the Houthis bombing a Saudi oil depot. Oh, wait a minute. Wasn't that the action that almost spun the world off its axis? Everyone snapped. Oh my gosh, it was a huge issue. Remember how big of a deal that was? Everybody was talking about it. Iran did it. Iran attacked Saudi. Nope, didn't happen. The Yemen Houthis attacked them from Yemen. And by the way, that's why this isn't a story today, because that's very clearly been proven. Oh, whoops, we don't get to continue to lie about what we want to lie about in regard to Yemen, so we'll just ignore it. Because that's what journalists do, right? This is incredible. They attacked it very clearly. It's just very public. And the media didn't even mention it. Because it looks pretty stupid to kind of casually report something that was the biggest story of the year when this was happening, when they tried to make up about Iran and sell this about Iran, and it couldn't have been the Houthis because it was, and it was the Houthis. It was Yemen. But it says a successful hit deep inside Saudi Arabia, again, Yemen's Houthi fighters, which is their other name, the other name for them that you can see there, carried out a retaliatory missile strike on an oil facility in Saudi port city of Jeddah Monday. Right? Remember that? I mean, it affected the oil prices. I mean, this was a very big deal when this happened. I almost can't believe this has happened more than once since then, and they haven't even talked about it. Which just shows you that they didn't care. They either didn't care then and it was being told to cover it, or it didn't happen. I mean, they're lying to you guys. How can we not see the dishonesty of the mainstream media? The Yemeni army says a new winged missile called the Quds 2, you know, the ones we told you about way back when they were still trying to lie and say that it was Iran. You know, the big white ones with the blue on them. We showed you these. Way back then when the Yemen Houthis said that they had made them, was used in the operation against the distribution station operated by Saudi Aramco. It's just crazy. This is happening and no one's talking about it. Because it didn't really mean what they wanted it to mean then. It was all about blaming Iran, which is what this now seems like. That's why that one's less important. But to kind of wrap it up here, the point is just to realize the world is shifting its perception of what's really going on, away from years and years of misrepresentation to a independent media brought reckoning of the reality, I think. This is the truth right here. In red, countries that the U.S. intervened through, military operations, backing dictators, militias and terrorists, CIA operations, and other means, which resulted in resources being stolen, land being stolen, destruction of public services and ruin with debt, populations enslaved, and more. Just in case we're unclear about how that looks. That is the world that this freedom government has created. A world in which almost every single nation on the planet has been influenced, invaded, controlled, sanctioned, manipulated, stolen from. And this is about freedom? I mean, this seems to be exactly what they claim the other people are doing. Iran wants to take over the world. Remember, that's what Bolton was saying. Well, that seems like what we're staring at here. And every single one of these is being forced into doing what they is literally counter to what they believe in. Remember when Trump said, we're not going to make people do what we want to do. We're going to let them think, no, we're going to force them to do what we want to do. We're going to force them to believe what we believe. We're going to force them to be a normal nation, as Pompeo would say. It's incredible. And on top of that, realize that they're lying to you about what they've been doing this whole time. As the quote says, we were always playing shell games to not make clear our leadership, how to our leadership, right? So to us, right? So to Americans and American leadership. They were lying to us, so we didn't know what was going on. They were, as he says, we're always playing shell games to not make clear to our leadership how many troops we had there. Why does that make sense to anybody? Jeffrey said this in an actual number is a lot more than roughly 200 troops. Meaning they lied to you. Outgoing Syria envoy admits hiding U.S. troops. He says, quote, we were always playing shell games, as I just read. Actually, number of troops in Eastern Syria is a lot more than the roughly 200 troops that Trump initially agreed to leave. So they lied to you guys. They lied and said, we're leaving this many, and then made sure there was more. Where does that sound familiar from? Oh, that's right. Every single time we talked about this. Remember when I said, you're such a conspiracy theorist. Oh, you don't believe in Trump. Didn't you listen? He said he's bringing him out. And he lied to you guys. He lied to you. All the MAGA people, all the Q people, he lied to you right there. He lied and he left him there. And I said that from the very beginning. Whether it was using, always forget the name. I always think Blackwater, but mercenaries or foreign, you know, rebels, really terrorist entities. That's the bulk of what they use today. But even after that, they lied about the personnel that were there. As he says, what Syria withdrawal? There was never a Syria withdrawal. If you're one of those people that chose to believe him, it's okay. Because we all get fooled. the point and how to gain, like, it's the whole thing, right? We all fall off. It's about getting back up and getting back on, guys. We all get tricked from time to time. Like, oh, just the other day, I was sent a video from somebody that tends to send me good things. And of course, the point was, it was a video about a mask thing. So I thought, and I shared it. Because, I mean, look, the point was, regardless of whether the video was even real, which I still should have done my due diligence, like always should do, just like I'm saying. The point was nonetheless the same, regardless of the video. That's like the only time I do that, and still not okay. I still should always take time to look into them, even if the point is the same, regardless of the video. But the point was, it was a video about something that had nothing to do with a mask. So I understand. The point is not that you make mistakes. It's about how you deal with them and how you respond afterward. We all fail. We all lose. We all make mistakes. It's about how you move forward after them that really defines who you are as a person. So as we're staring at this, and it's just one small example, but the larger picture, that you're, whether it's Trump or whoever you believe in a government, that they lied to you, that they fooled you, that they used your trust of them in their benefit against you. And that's always what's happening in our government. And it's time for us to change that if we can actually stand together against this broken system. And as Sarah points out, what countries will Joe Biden and Kamala Harris add to the list? The U.S. bombing list, sort of like the other one. Just take a little peek there, you know. Fighting for freedom is what we call that. And remind me how many of those countries are doing quite well today. Yeah, let that sink in. Libya, doing real well. It's just obvious how they've kept these entities where they can abuse them. And finally, last point here, as I was going to try and roll into a show after this, and I can't promise I'm going to do it, but I'll see if I can have enough time after this. But either way, my next show will be just coming off of this point in regard to what's going on with COVID and everything else. But this is from Motherboard. Vice. How the U.S. military buys location data from ordinary apps. So in the middle of all this situation, everything that's happening, your government and your military are actually buying data, I would argue illegally, from apps that aren't supposed to be giving it away to use it against you. In regard to counterterrorism, even though it's not only foreign entities, but also for COVID-19. It says a Muslim prayer app. Think about how dishonest and gross that is. An app that's made for Muslims to pray. What it does is essentially gives them a time for if you understand how Muslims pray in general, there's multiple times throughout the day that they have to stop and pray. And this was an app that gave them the timings and made sure wherever they were that they had the right time and they knew what they had to do. And the U.S. government is abusing that and spying on people because of their religion. When did that become okay? Isn't that exactly, that's contrary to everything we pretend that we are. Religious freedom and all, you know, Mike Pompeo, you always constantly bluster about fighting for religious freedom as you're literally attacking Shiites around the world because you're a gross hypocrite. But this is the Muslim prayer app is disgusting that they would use that. Abuse the privacy and the trust that they have, take their information and spy on them. Why? Because they're Muslims? Yes. A Muslim prayer app with over 98 million downloads is one of the apps connected to a wide-ranging supply chain that sends ordinary people's personal data to brokers, contractors, and the military. It says the U.S. military is buying the granular movement data of people around the world, harvesting from innocuous-seeming apps, Motherboard has learned. The most popular app among a group Motherboard analyzed connected to this sort of data is a Muslim prayer and Quran app that has more than 98 million downloads worldwide. Others include a Muslim dating app, a popular Craigslist app, an app for following storms, and a Level app that can be used to help, for example, install shelves in a bedroom. Just ridiculous. All of which is spying on you and gathering information about you. Through public records, interviews, and with developers, the technical analysis, Motherboard uncovered two separate parallel data streams that the U.S. military uses or has used to obtain location data. One relies, now think about this in regard to contact tracing, which is arguably one of the most obvious parts, and pharmacovigilance, 2 years of monitoring after the vaccine, right? This is a test run, as it feels. One relies on a company called Babel Street, which creates a product called Locate X. U.S. Special Operations Command, a branch of the military tasked with counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, and special reconnaissance, brought access to Locate X to assist on overseas special forces operations. The other stream is through a company called Xmode, which obtains location data directly from apps. Why is any of this okay? These are just average people out there. Then it sells that data to contractors by, and by extension, the military. The news highlights the opaque location data industry and the fact that the U.S. military, which has infamously used other location data to target drone strikes, is purchasing access to sensitive data. I'm sure plenty of Muslim people out there that are just going about their daily lives that have no, not committing crimes, are probably going to be really upset about this. Where they're, you know, they could potentially use this information to target drone strikes in their locations. Many of the users and apps involved in the data supply chain are Muslim, which is notable considering that the U.S. has waged a decades-long war on predominantly Muslim territory groups in the Middle East. No one can deny that. And hundreds of thousands of civilians have died during military interventions in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iraq, right? A lot. Millions of people around the world in their war of terror, which is what it was. Motherboard does not know of any specific operations in which this type of app-based location data has been used by the U.S. military. I'm assuming it's probably a hell of a lot more than we realize. Whether we're talking about things like Soleimani or things like the assassination we just saw, I promise you things like this play into it. And if people like this are in these other countries, such as Iran, and are using an app they think is just monitoring the times they need to stop and pray, and they're abusing that reverence to their religion and then murdering people because freedom. It says Xmode then sells access to this sort of data to a wide range of different clients. Motherboard has previously shown that one of those clients includes a private intelligence firm whose goal is to use location data to track people down to their doorstep. Xmode has also demonstrated how its data can be used to follow where people in COVID-19 hotspots traveled to after potentially exposing one another to coronavirus. So look how quickly that went from foreign entities and drone strikes to you and your home and your doorstep. What do you know? We're so crazy. How location data flows from popular apps to U.S. military. Apps, including fitness trackers as well. Location data, sell it to broker to Xmode and these different groups. Then they sell them to defense contractors and they give them to the U.S. military. Quote, Xmode licenses this data panel to a small number of technology companies that may work with government military services. You know, like things like Google, Amazon, you know, everything, right? But our work with such contractors is international, and primarily focused on three use cases. So remember, they just said to your doorstep. And COVID-19, which means you, local, counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and of course, predicting future hotspots of COVID-19. Isn't it funny how counterterrorism and monitoring terrorists ends up being the same tool by which they keep you safe in regard to you, and they monitor you for future COVID-19 hotspots? Sort of how like they use the things they tracked cattle with, that they're now using to track you with bracelets and COVID-19 contact tracing, or all these different things we talked about. There are tools they used to go after school shooters or terrorists or any number of criminals, but it's now being retooled to go to make sure you're safe and protect you and track you. Because you're now the criminal. That's the point. Your body is now the battlefield. This is all shifting, just like Whitney Webb has pointed out. It's a pretty scary reality to realize, but it's just time that we embrace this and acknowledge where we really are. It could not be more clear. And why not? I'll leave you with this. Something else that relates to this in the same way. And I'm going to follow up on this. Of course, I put this out. I'm sure somebody else is going to jump on this and talk more about it, but this is an important topic. This is from May 2008. Nanorobot hardware architecture for medical defense. All right, so think about this. Location data, the same kind of thing. This is November 16th, by the way, just so we're clear. That's right now. This is from 2008. So consider this as we go forward into where we are right now and the kind of technology in 2008 was already in the works and already happening and even being framed in regard to pandemics. It says this work presents a new approach a new approach with details on the integrated platform and hardware architecture for nano robots. So understand, it's not nanotech, which could mean just simply small things. They're not tech, but nano, what was the term we used before? That gets confused and people think robots. Anyway, there's things that are use the term nano that are just applying to small versions of organic matter. But this is nano robots. Application in epidemic control. So think the virus thing we just talked about, right? Think Charles Lieber, Harvard, making essentially machines that are the size of viruses. Machines, probably the wrong word, but, you know, tech the size of viruses that's actually used to mimic viruses. Here we are in 2008, where they're talking about nanorobots applied to epidemic control, which should enable real-time in vivo prognosis of biohazard infection. You know, like the vaccine kind of thing we're talking about. Prognosis of what's going on in your body with this vaccine seems very relevant. The recent developments in this field of nanoelectrics, this very thing that people like Matt Hepburn and Mansif Salawi are adamant about, bioelectrics, implantables. The recent developments in this field with transducers progressively shrinking down to smaller sizes through nanotechnology and carbon nanotubes are expected to result in innovative biomedical instrumentation possibilities. In 2008, with new therapies and efficient diagnosis methodologies. So you just got to wonder when this began to be something that was usable and whether we were told about it, whether it was being experimented on in places like Wuhan and North Carolina University, and whether that's what happened, and whether we're talking about people like Harvard and Lieber getting arrested right in the middle of this, in the beginning of when this was all starting. And it just seems like there was something that ties this with what's going on. And I don't mean it doesn't mean there's not something circulating, but there's something that's being tested and experimented in regard to these things. And that's regardless of this COVID scenario, COVID scandal. This is right in front of us. They're working on this. Now, whether COVID is used to drive this out into a public setting or whether that's exactly what this is, why that we don't know about these kind of things and why this is something that's right now being called conspiracy theory. Why is that? The use of integrated systems, smart biosensors, and programmable nano devices are advancing nanoelectrics, enabling the progressive research and development of molecular machines. It should provide high precision, pervasive biomedical monitoring with real time data transmission. That is exactly what we're talking about. The use of nanobioelectrics as embedded systems is the natural pathway toward manufacturing methodology to achieve nanorobot applications out of laboratories sooner as possible. To demonstrate the practical application of medical nanorobotics, a 3D simulation based on clinical data addresses how to integrate communication with nanorobots using RFID, mobile phones, satellites, applied to long-distance ubiquitous surveillance and health monitoring, of course, for troops in conflict zones, not for you in real time in your own home. Of course not. 2008. If we're going to pretend like this is not real time, actually in existence right now, if they've been working on this since 2008, and it's already stuff that we know they've got the potential, the technology to achieve, again, we're lying to ourselves. So the question is whether or not this is what's being used to implement this, or there's something else going on around it all, but this is being worked on using RFIDs, mobile phones, satellites, ubiquitous surveillance, and health monitoring of people. Therefore, the current model can also be used to prevent and save population against the case of some targeted epidemic disease. Yeah, which is what seems like we're on the doorstep of. So when tomorrow we get some fake accusation of Iran committing a bio attack because Israel, well, guess what? We already have the tech. Don't worry. We're going to inject you all. We're going to give you things around your wrists or however it's going to start. And it's going to be, we're going to make sure we know that you're all safe. Oh, make sure you get your vaccine though, too, because you can't move around without it. And that's going to be driven through without a question after we have some big event, right? I'm not saying that's 100% going to happen. My point is we can see that narrative obviously being built. And if they pull that trigger, I don't think we can for one second question whether or not this is something that is being implemented because of it. And we're just one of them. I think there's many implementations happening. But it's just time for us to be honest with ourselves and realize where we really are in this country and in general. It can be a scary time, but the truth is that we will not change any of it until we can be honest with ourselves. And if we can't realize that one of our chief allies is pretty much one of the most terrorist-minded entities on the planet, then we're failing. It's not a racist comment to recognize crimes being committed. I don't care who's committing them. I mean, I'm calling out the U.S. government. I don't care who's committing the crimes. You should have the courage to call out the crimes regardless of who's committing them. Find the courage, people. Stand up for people who can't speak for themselves. I love you all. Thank you so much for being here today. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.